Learning Module 6, it provides you with motivational approaches for ADL refusals and med-administering to increase your resident's ADL independence. Remember, as mentioned in the other modules, you are trying to create an atmosphere of ADL success for your residents. This model deals with motivating a resident to do his or her ADLs. However, now we are dealing with the topic of motivation in brief, only as it relates to a resident's performance of activities of daily living. There are residents in most every ALF who have abilities and capabilities to do portions of their own ADLs, but they just choose not to do them. Think about a resident in your facility that fits into this category and write his or her name after question 1. Question 2. Write the ADL or ADLs he or she is refusing to perform that they're perfectly capable of performing. Think about the person whose name you just wrote and decide if they could fit into any of the following 9 categories. Number 1. Maybe he or she has never been really a go-getter or a self-starter. Number 2. The type of person that if they can get someone else to do something for them, they will. Sound familiar? Number 3. They are manipulative and like to feel powerful. 4. Had a physical disability for a long time and are used to having others at their beck and call. 5. May refuse to do ADLs related to hygiene because they never have valued cleanliness as being very important. 6. Still hold the emotional scars of the Depression era and don't want to waste water to wash themselves or to have their clothes washed. 7. None of these could be true, and they may be in the early stages of Alzheimer's, and because they feel they are losing their grip on their memory, they mask their fear by being overly demanding or overly dependent. They may have an attitude of, if I don't try, I won't fail. 8. Disoriented and get a sense of comfort from wearing the same outfit. 9. Disoriented and unaware they are wearing the same soiled clothes. For question 3, decide if your resident is oriented enough to know he or she is refusing or becoming demanding because he or she is disoriented, as just described in items 7, 8, and 9, or a combination of the two. So, I'm not talking now about the forgetful Alzheimer's resident or the frail resident who truly cannot do for his or herself, but the person who decides they don't want to perform an ADL. In motivating a resident, here are 3 approaches that are most commonly used. Let's talk about the resident who may take a commanding voice tone and demands that you put on her shoes or comb her hair or wash her face and hands when she's capable of doing all of these herself. Let's call her Hester. The first approach to try is a soft line approach. What you say is, Hester, there's an old saying that states, what you don't use, you lose. If you feel she needs more information, continue. And what that means is, physically, if you don't use your muscles, you gradually lose the use of that muscle. If need, continue further. Now, I'm interested in helping you keep the hand and arm movement that you have. Pause for a moment for her to reply once again. Then say, if it seems appropriate, here's your brush. You then hand Hester her brush with a friendly, expectant smile. Question 4. A suggested soft line approach with a demanding resident is to state what initially. A second approach, if you feel a simple but more direct explanation may be useful, if Hester says, what are you talking about? I don't believe you. State in a factual but friendly tone, Hester, when your hands and arms sit immobile or not moving, the blood supply to your muscles is slowed, thus causing your muscles to become stiff. Over time, this decreases blood supply. Muscles become more and more stiff and less able to move. Question 5. Fill in the blanks in this question regarding the explanation connecting lack of movement with stiffness. A third approach for your Hester, who refuses to perform an ADL she is perfectly capable of performing, is to motivate by the why behind her actions. In short, this is how this one works. Why should she assist with her ADLs? With a kind, gentle, but professional manner, inform her that your ALF is only able to provide a certain level of care for residents. And when care increases beyond that certain level, Hester is no longer an appropriate placement for your facility. Question 6. If your resident continues to be demanding, point out factually that their level of care may increase to a point of being what for your ALF? Now, a major word of caution here. Be aware of the tone of your voice you are using when presenting these facts. Be sure to present them in a factual manner and not as a threat. Here's what I mean. See if you can pick up on what there is about my voice that makes it sound threatening and unprofessional. Hester, our home is only able to provide a certain level of care for its residents or tenants. When that level of care increases beyond a certain point, Hester, you will no longer be an appropriate placement in this assisted living facility. Three qualities in my voice as I stated the why should she reason to be motivated that made it sound negative, unprofessional, and threatening are number one, I emphasize certain words by saying them louder. Secondly, I clipped off or ended quickly some of my words. And thirdly, I used several pauses, which had the effect of adding a certain emotional drama and increased the emotional intensity of the whole incident. Question 7. What are three tones to avoid in your voice that make it sound threatening? Now, I'll make the same statement, but eliminate the threat and change it to a supportive, sincere, and most of all, professional voice tone. Hester, our home is only able to provide a certain level of care for its residents or tenants. When that level of care increases beyond a certain point, Hester, you would no longer be an appropriate placement for our facility. Same statement, but what a difference. Agree? In this last statement to Hester, I, number one, consciously lowered the tone of my voice. Remember, you learned about the importance of voice tone in Learning Module 4 on verbal prompts. Number two, I kept the volume of my voice the same for all words. And thirdly, phrased the words with a smooth, sincere, caring pace and feeling. It had that intangible underlying quality to let Hester know I care about her. This is not only reflected in my voice, but in my facial expression as described in Learning Module 5 on nonverbal prompts. Question 8. What are three ways to change your voice with a resident to sound professional and caring? One last word about giving your uncooperative resident the facts. Keep in mind, as you know, what you are telling your resident is the truth. If your Hester is disrupting your facility, being very vocal or demanding, as well as demanding more ADL care than initially agreed upon when they entered your facility, she will end up having to move to a more appropriate setting. However, this is a key point. If you are unsure about using approach number 3 of presenting the facts in a factual manner, it's best to check with your director or supervisor. In short, do you feel that you have the right and the authority to make this very direct statement to a resident about their level of care and about it being appropriate for the level of placement in your facility. So make sure you have the facts first and feel you have the authority first before you use this approach. You might talk to your supervisor, perhaps about talking to the resident for you if you feel uncomfortable using this approach. In review, the first motivational approach to do an ADL was, what you don't use, you lose. The second approach was to provide a more detailed explanation. Approach number three was reminding your resident of the terms or conditions of their level of care at your ALF if you felt that you had the authority to do so. The fourth motivational approach is used with a different kind of resident. A resident like Joe, who refuses to change his clothes because he remembers all too well the Depression era and feels he may not want to waste the water it takes to provide him with clean clothes daily. Now, with Joe, as compared to Hester, it's not that he wants to be waited on, but in addition to saving water, he simply may have never valued or thought it important to be clean. If you feel odor and hygiene are becoming a concern due to lack of cleanliness, the time has come for a firmer stance regarding ADLs with your Joe. In learning Module 1 on instruction, you learned about the importance of giving your resident a choice. But in this case, the best approach takes place in four steps. The first step is to make a statement, not ask a question. You've already tried asking Joe to change clothes, and that hasn't worked. So you say something like, Joe, you need to change your shirt now. Step two, if he states a refusal like, I don't want to, no, it's not dirty, then go back to step one and repeat, Joe, you need to change your shirt now. Make sure the volume and tone of your voice is low. Do not increase the volume on certain words and do not clip off the ends of certain words, or your statement may escalate the emotionality of what you're saying. Just listen to this. Joe, you need to change your shirt now. Well, that sounded pretty bad, and I'm sure none of you ever talked to a resident tone in your voice. Step three requires a judgment call on your part as to how emphatic or forceful Joe is about his refusal. If you feel he is on the fence, so to speak, you might unbutton one button of his shirt. But how can you tell if Joe is on the fence and it's okay to proceed with the ADL by unbuttoning a button of the shirt that you'd like to have changed? Here's a technique you might try. Look at his face and listen to the volume and emphasis in his words. They reflect how determined he is not to comply. Just listen. Here's reply number one. I don't want to. Reply number two. I don't want to. No. Quite a difference, and I think it's pretty obvious. Question nine. What are two ways to tell if it is okay to approach a resident who refuses ADLs? Many residents will give in at this point when you start to unbutton the shirt. However, you definitely do not want this to escalate into a full-blown confrontation. So if he still remains negative, to create an environment for success, go to step four and say, I'll leave now, but I'll be back in a little while, and we do need to change your shirt. If you don't return and someone on the shift after you approaches him, that just makes it that much harder for you tomorrow to get Joe to comply. So if you state you're going to come back in a little while, do so. If it's at the end of your shift, state that and say, well, Joe, that shirt needs to be changed. I'm going off shift now. Maybe Alice will have better luck. However, obviously, you'll win no popularity contest if this becomes a standard ploy on your part when the next shift has to do your work. So plan better. The next day, approach Joe towards the beginning of your shift to allow you an opportunity to revisit and request several times the shirt change. Question 10. It's best to approach a resident who refuses ADLs, blank, in the day to allow time to approach them several times later during your shift. Fill in the blank. In summary, the four steps with someone who is at the point where lack of ADL performance affects other residents due to odor and affecting their health due to perhaps incontinence. The first step is to make a statement. We need to change your clothes now. You do not request because you've tried that and requesting hasn't worked. Step two, calmly repeat your statement. We need to change your clothes now. Step three, judge the level of refusal. If your resident seems to be close to complying, physically start the clothing change. Step four, if you feel the resident's refusal is too emphatic or emotional, as reflected by his facial expression, voice volume, body language, and so on, inform the resident that you will return. Then plan your care schedule accordingly to accommodate or to make room for revisiting the resident later on in your shift. Of course, the very last step with Joe, as with Hester, who demanded care, is the "Why should I?" statement. You inform Joe that he may become an inappropriate placement for your ALF, requiring a level of care too high for your facility and would need to seek placement elsewhere. However, it goes without saying, be very clear about your facility policy on clothes changing. Obviously, one resident's rights end where another one's begin. And by that I mean if the odor from Joe is to the point of bothering other residents or incontinency is presenting a health hazard to Joe, the firm three-step method stated above needs to be considered. Depending on your facility policy, distractions might be used, like washing Joe's clothes while he's in the whirlpool, or if he takes his clothes off at night while he's sleeping. Question 11. Especially where odor is involved, one resident's rights end where another resident's rights what? Question 12. Incontinence can present a what due to lack of ADL performance. However, unfortunately for some, it is only when the consequences occur do they feel motivation to change. Just like the confirmed smoker may not be motivated to learn techniques of breaking the nicotine habit until he or she has a sore throat that may not go away or has trouble breathing. Thus, your resident who refuses ADLs may not be motivated to cooperate with ADL requirements until he or she is actually transferred to another facility. Up to this point, we've talked about ADL refusals regarding residents who are demanding and your residents who do not value cleanliness. Let's shift gears to talk about how two principles of motivation can assist you in teaching your residents to self-administer medications and to provide that environment of success. Oftentimes, stiff fingers and limbs, as well as shaky hands, make it a challenge for a resident to take medications or apply ointments independently. As you know, performing these tasks may be a criteria for placement in your ALF and the use of a home health agency. The most basic motivator to learn, or in this case to relearn a skill, is first to have your resident see a need to do the task. So as you are asking Mary or Maud to stretch that extra inch to put the ointment on her foot, or raise a shaky hand to her mouth to take medication, she needs to be aware that independence in taking meds may be needed to maintain her current level of care. Therefore, the motivation comes from being aware that independence in taking meds is part of a larger concept, that is, their placement and level of services required, rather than just an isolated task of taking medications. You say to Mary, "I know it's hard for you to reach your toe to put that ointment on. I'll help you uncap the tube and put some on your finger and guide your hand to your toes, but I'm not qualified to apply the ointment for you." Question 13. Independence in taking meds is explained to your resident as it relates to what two areas? Mm-hmm. Secondly, in providing an environment of success to motivate your residents to do the medication task that is a challenge for her, associate it with something that she has done in the past, perhaps hundreds of times before. Here are some examples. As the resident reaches down to put the ointment on her foot, you might motivate her by saying, "Mary, remember gardening you talked about yesterday? Just pretend like you're reaching down to pull those weeds or to plant a seed." Maybe if Mary is an extremely neat person, you might relate to putting the ointment on to picking up a piece of thread or lint off the carpet. For a male resident who had played some sports, you might say something like, "Imagine that you're picking up a golf ball, a baseball, or a horseshoe." Use your imagination. Now, this approach works best if you know your resident and the example applies closely to something he or she can really relate to in their life. For the cap on a medicine bottle, you might say, "Remember putting on or taking off lids on jars when you did canning?" If you have the unit dose blister cards, relate it to pushing a button on an elevator or an electric light switch. Some old-fashioned light switches had switch plates that were push buttons. And if your resident sews, you might relate it to pushing the bobbin into their sewing machine. Question 14. To motivate your resident to do the medication task that is a challenge, associate it to what? In summary, to provide an environment of success with residents that are demanding ADL care, number one, take a soft line approach of what you don't use, you lose. Number two, provide more detailed information. Number three, repeat the information as needed. Number four, inform resident of the level of care provided by your ALF. Number five, be aware of your voice, the volume, the tone, and be sincere. For resident refusing ADLs, number one, make a statement, "It's time to do thus and so now." Number two, repeat your statement. Number three, return later. Number four, try to physically assist the resident. Number five, inform resident of level of care provided by your ALF. Number six, use distractions. For med administering, number one, provide assistance only. Number two, inform resident of level of care provided. And number three, relate the task to one they've enjoyed in the past. Well, congratulations, you've completed all six learning modules. Thank you for purchasing our course. It is hoped this learning experience will prove to be a valuable one for you to enhance your professional skills. This is Tracy Catherine Appleton. Talk to you again in our next home study course.